Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard. And, you know, I always say I'm excited to do one of these podcasts. But this one's really exciting because I have Maria Eva Urrutia here. Hi, Eva.
Hello. Hi, Jeff.
And I consider Eva my friend because it was in November of 2020 that your film Avec le Temps, which is, and the English translation is With Time, was in the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. And you're in Argentina, and we had a great Zoom Q&A during the pandemic. And yes. Then, as some people are aware, Sherman Oaks Film Festival and its sister festival, Film Invasion Los Angeles, has a filmmakers board where people who had films at the festivals become a jury to give out awards to the next crop of filmmakers, which is lovely because it's an award from your peers. And I think it, honestly, I think it means... it should mean more to people even than like the selection jury. But anyhow, yeah. So we've been in touch for 2.5, almost 3 years now. So
yeah.
And we were going to record this podcast. Oh, so many times, right?
Yes. At least 2 times, I think.
Yeah. And we kept rescheduling, but this is the last reschedule. We're actually here. We're on Zoom. So my apologies to anyone who doesn't like the sound quality. It sounds pretty good to us, but I know sometimes Zoom, my voice is much louder than the other person's and I can't do anything about it. I would probably have to go in and adjust the volume. I could spend a week adjusting volume, or I could just say, sorry if I'm too loud.
Yes, you can't do anything if you are 100.
The joy of Zoom is a person in Los Angeles and a person in Argentina can have a wonderful conversation as if we're in the same room. So it's kind of neat.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so now part of the introduction will also be the Avec le Temps, which is just an incredible short film drama. Yes, it was in the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2020. And yes. In 2020, Grand Jury Prize for Best Short Film Drama and Grand Jury Prize for Best Director of a Short Film. And so congratulations to you, Eva.
Thank you. That was so good. Yeah, I was really, really happy when Avec le Temps got that.
Yeah, it's funny to me. We used to have fewer awards in... and I know no one makes a film with the intention of getting awards, but it really is not a bad thing. Not a bad time to...
No. It's nice, especially if it comes from your peers, really. Because it means that... I mean, that... I don't know. It's nice to be recognized by the people you know, that knows how difficult it is to make a film. Because, it's easy in some way, but it's not easy... the producing, the whole time that you need to, you know, especially in a country like Argentina, or some countries are more difficult, you know, than others because of the economical situation, right?
Oh, yeah. And honestly, it's not possible for it to be easy to make an indie film, regardless of the length. And actually, and your film's quite long.
Yes.
It's a long short. In fact, it might qualify now. We created a new category at the festival. It's called featurette.
Oh, featurette.
So that 1 to 20 minutes is a short film, 20 to 60 is a featurette, and then over 60 minutes is a feature.
Yeah.
And I think that was a COVID thing, to be honest. I think during COVID, people had so much extra time to do edits that it used to be longer shorts, unlike yours.
Yeah.
Most longer shorts were not great.
Yeah.
But now, boy, when I am watching as a part of the selection jury submission, once the longer shorts are just such high quality now. It's, I think.
Yes. There is so many good films now. Yeah. Independent films. So many. I had the opportunity of watching some of the, doing some of the, you know, they watch for the festivals for both, I think.
You've done both Film Invasion Los Angeles and Sherman Oaks Film Festival.
And there were it's difficult to choose because there are so many good films, really.
Yeah. And And we're just showing you the good ones. We've already screened them out to the top, 5%. And then you're helping choose. But how hard is it to choose? Sometimes it's...
Oh, yes, yes. And from every, from comedy, science fiction, some of them are just fantastic. Yeah.
They really are. It's really heartening to get to see just how much wonderful... It's wonderful to see all this great creative talent in the world. And yes. Then, of course, if you're like me, you go, oh, why can't everyone in the world be watching this? Like, I would rather everyone see these films than, Top Gun or something. Like, everyone in the world watch Top Gun and no one in the world is and you have to be at a film festival to see this one, these just wonderful personal films, or sometimes not always personal, but
yeah,
it's an interesting era we're in, but. At least it's obvious, right? The technology has made independent filmmakers are able to really do some amazing things now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because you don't have to develop film, and you don't have to rent massive. Most home computers now can do the edit. It's
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. What, 10, 15 years ago, it was a couple thousand a day to rent an Avid.
Yeah. Yes, and to edit, it was like, with the...
Oh, yeah, the old-fashioned edits, with the flatbeds. Yes.
Oh, my God. That was,
now this little laptop I'm using for Zoom, it can edit video, too. I mean, it's probably...
Yeah. Yes, it's unbelievable, all the things you can do. Like, people can... That's why there is so many good things, and there is so many other things that you. But people can do things, right? They don't have to wait for somebody like with a big budget to do it. It got democratized, right? It was like a little bit of a more.
I think so. Yeah, and I think the era of democratization. Like at first, it just meant there's a lot of junk getting made, and people, people just making single shot 90 minute. I saw 4 or 5 single shot 90 minute films when digital video first came out, because everyone's like, oh, no film. Let's pull a trick and never cut. And it's like, that's not a good film.
Yeah. The experimentation. Yeah.
And now everyone is matured, I think, with the technology. And now people are just making just lovely work.
Yeah.
Including you. So we've had this general chat about film. Let's focus in on you, Ava. Again, I can't stress to people enough. Oh, I didn't mention the TV series, right? So people should watch your film. If you're in the US or UK, you can go to Amazon Prime Video, type in Discover Indie Film. I think it tends to auto-complete around the D of indie. In season 7, episode 8, is your film, Avec le Temps, just playing alone.
Yes.
And it's a beautiful, beautiful, just a very intense and beautifully made drama. Just everything about it is excellent. So the level of filmmaking skill that I see in that does make me extra curious what your answer to my super general podcast question, which is, how did you get started with your interest in film?
How did I get started with this film, or how did I start
in life?
Well, I think I always, since I was very little, very, very little, like 5, 6, probably 6 years old, I like to perform, so I will... Do my sister? I will make my sister and my two sisters actually to perform with me, but I will be the director, right? And do theater plays for my family, because we have a very, very big family, aunts, uncles, and everybody. So they will, when there was a reunion, a family reunion, I will do this act, of theater thing. So I always. Really, and I will make the story since I was very young. I will invent. I will create the story, and then I will perform or dance, sing, whatever it was. So since I was very, very young, and also because I had this, I grew up with my grandmother. My parents died when I was very, very young. So my grandmother raised me. And every time I was like kind of sad or, you know, missing my mom or, you know, one of my aunts will take me to the movie theater, you know, so I watch Bambi or Dumbo or Pinocchio. And it was like immediately it, like I forgot about everything and just stayed there, you know, in the movie theater. It was fantastic for me. So I think it's, there was something there that for me, it drove me, you know, to the cinema since I was very, very, very young. But I think when I was in high school is when I started like thinking about making films and directing. But I am from a generation that is not like today that you have things so easy. No, back then you didn't have cameras, at least not here in Argentina. You know, you didn't have cameras like to start shooting or filming. When I was a teenager, I couldn't do it. I did write, you know, I wrote scripts and imagined that I was, but I couldn't film until I was much older. And also it was very expensive to do it. You have to see where you couldn't, you know, ask somebody to lend a camera or but I did wanted to be a filmmaker since I was like 14, 15 years old. And I didn't get to be one much, much later on. So, but yeah, I don't know if that answered the question, but.
That does. And I'm curious, as a teenager, were there any films that particularly inspired you or was it always?
No. Yeah. As a teenager, well, back then, many, especially many Argentinian films in the moment, because it was after the dictatorship here, and cinema were reborning, you know, they were again like, and the films were, to me, was they were really good. And so when I went to the cinema, it was like, the official story, for example, was a film that to me was very personal and touched me in many levels. And so, yes, I watched that and definitely like it was admired, no? The director, Luis Puenzo, in case, you know?
So, and since Americans, we tend not to know anything about other countries. I mean, you're talking about the Perón.
Yes. Right?
The Perón dictatorship. So during the
Perón was not a dictatorship. No, Perón was a democratic government.
Oh.
The dictatorship was the military. The army was the one who took over power and it was like for 7 years here from 19.
And they restricted all the arts.
Oh yes, people had to burn books. Like for example, The Little Prince was forbidden. Books, right.
Right. So there was a renaissance of sorts when
the renaissance. Exactly. That's the word after the dictatorship. You know, in 1983. So yes, the stories that the director back then were telling for me were very like moving. You know, like because they were talking about what we lived under the dictatorship. They were expressing themselves and they were denouncing. You know, so the films were not only good, but also they were, you know, telling a story for people to know what happened, so to make changes. You know, so this kind of thing never happened again. So to me, that was one like really the cinema was. Of making film was to make a change, you know, to use it not only as a form of art, but to make changes, you know.
Yeah, which is very meaningful.
Yeah. So that was how I experienced it back then, and then of course Argentinians especially the Argentinian filmmaker like a lot of European films also. So I was I watched Bergman, Tarkovsky, Kielowski. Well, many directors that for me that they were like that I loved their films, you know. So I loved it in everything. The puesta en escena, as we say, the, you know, the performances, the lighting, the stories. And of course, I also like some Hollywood ones, you know, of course, you know, like Silence of the Lambs, for example, was one of the films I loved. Taxi Driver, that it was an old film, but when I watched it, it was already old, but it was fantastic. El Padrino, The Good Father, you know. Well, many films also like that they were Hollywood that I also liked. So, yeah.
Yeah, we grew up in, I mean, I believe we're peers, and you and I grew up in the era of the VHS tape, right?
Where yes, exactly.
Suddenly, the VHS. Yes. Cinema libraries, you used to just have to wait for them to rerun old cinema yes. on the TV. Yes. And all of a sudden, you could walk into a place and learn all about whether it was French film or yeah, the Scorsese type stuff. Yeah, it was quite the cinematic renaissance when VHS hit.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And you could go and rent, right? Blockbuster. And yeah, we are from the same generation. Today is so different, huh? Because Netflix is. Like kids today, they don't have to wait almost for anything. They just can type and they have what they want. But we needed to. Sometimes you wanted to watch a film, you will go to the store, the video store, and it's rented. You have to wait a week, you know, for the film you wanted to watch. Well, it had some, you know, it was good also, you know, you have their magic also having to wait and.
And it was so, there was something special about selecting what you would watch that night, looking at shelves of spines and seeing artwork and posters. And even if you'd never heard of something, for some reason, I don't discover things on these streaming services because I'm always watching something that other people have told me to watch or recommended. Yes. And there's no discovery. Back then, you would just walk in and discover a film you didn't even intend to rent because you went there with something in mind, it's rented, and you'd be like, okay, that looks good. I'll try it.
Exactly. Yes. So, it was, I guess I have many mentors, many, many different filmmakers that to me were like my masters, you know, and
And you were writing all along. When did you finally get to work with a camera?
Well, the first time I was making a documentary about the children who disappeared, the people who were killed by the military. So I was making a documentary that I didn't finish. It was something that I just started interviewing different children of the disappeared, children of ex-political prisoners, children of exiled people. And that's how I started filming, you know, like I got somebody borrowed a camera or lent a camera to me and I borrowed a camera and I started just shooting interviews, you know, like asking questions. So that film, I didn't edit and I didn't finish it, but I do have very, very nice good footage. And I also did some fictionalized part of it, you know, like I made some people act also, not only interviews with the real people, but also they will perform sometimes something that they went through in the during their childhood during the, you know, the dictatorship. So, and I do have that still. And today probably I'm gonna just, because I have the possibility of interviewing again all these people like more than 20 years later, so I can see, you know, and I think I'm going to just work something with that material that I didn't, that raw material that I never finished. But that's how I started. So
And did you start that in university, or was it after?
Yes, school? No, I was in university. Yes, I was living in Canada when I started, because I went to live in Canada, and then there I had the opportunity to have a camera, actually a beta cam. It was back then. So I interviewed Argentinian and Chilean and Guatemalan children of the disappear there in Canada that were living in Canada. And then when I come back to Argentina, I came back here and interviewed people here. So I started like that. And the first fiction film I actually wrote and co-directed with somebody else. It was also filmed in Canada, but I had to act there. I was the main character. I couldn't find somebody to do it. But then I did some casting for some of the characters, and the children who were actors there were my little cousins, 3 years old, 6 years old. So I just made them perform, and it was fantastic. That film is called Through Your Eyes. It was 2002-2003. And I shot that in 16 millimeters. It was film, actually. The film was very, different than, me and the other director had to, be sure what we wanted to shoot. It was not, we couldn't, waste, so much.
It's very hard to explain to people what it was like to shoot on 16 or any film. Yeah, you had a certain number of feet, and if
to develop that was
and every foot you shot, you had to spend money developing. That was the other thing.
Yes,
right? Developing.
Yes. So that was a nine minute short film based on my own story, actually, because I'm a child of a disappear. My parents actually they didn't die of natural causes. They were killed by the Argentinian government during the dictatorship.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
No, it's okay. Yeah. No problem. So because of that, I made a film based on my own story, the 9 minutes short film. And then for many years, I didn't do anything else because I was broke after that. And the film went to different film festivals. Back then, it was different. You had to send the film by mail. Yes, exactly.
I know you would actually mail... Another thing people can't understand now, right?
You would mail film,
a reel, a festival or the production company, whoever you wanted to see it.
Yes.
And they would have to load it up in a screening room and watch it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's how it was. So, and then I didn't do any, I did some, because I started with a friend, a production company in Vancouver. And we filmed many different things, and we did a very short, another short film, but we did for about women in law who changed law, the lawyers and judges, women in Vancouver, in BC, that made the law changes for women rights. So we did a short film about that organization. Then I came back to Argentina. And I decided to go to film school here in Argentina because I wanted to learn more about the technical part, the lighting, the camera. And then I filmed Avec le Temps. So it was
So Avec le Temps was the first film. Was it shot during the film school experience or right after?
No, after. Right after. Right after, yes. I did the, I always write. I have many scripts that I write, and and this one was one of them. I did write the script while I was while I was at school. I was writing it, and of course I rewrote it many times until I was able to film it. So I put some of the money to do it, and my sister, who lives in Canada and is a dancer, she was a dancer back then, now she teaches ballet, puts part of the money, and I was able to film, and also because people they will, I didn't have to pay to them, you know, just very little, and they just wanted to do it, you know. And so that's because it was a long film. It was like almost 30 minutes. The location, somebody, a friend of my mother, lent the house. So I was able to shoot there. If not, you know, it was going to be kind of...
And the house is so... Was that your mother's friend's... like you didn't have to do production design? Because it's a beautiful...
No, we did have to do because
oh,
we...
Did.
Yeah, I had an art... Fantastic art, the people that made art, and we did some of, but they allowed me to do it in their own house, and then we had to take everything off, you know, with paper. So that was nice of my mom, you know, friend of my mother, that because he was living there, so he was, you know, all the crew there, and it was like for like 3 weeks because we couldn't shoot only on the weekends. We couldn't do it during the week because people had to work. So it was only on the weekend. So he had to be with all this mess in his house, like for 3 weeks. But what we managed to do it. And we became really, really good friends with all the crew. And was they are friends of mine until even today. We're really close friends. So it was fantastic project and fantastic crew, and everything was so good.
Was it people wanting to work with you, or was it also the power of the script and this story?
I think it was the power of the script, and also because the way I introduced myself and I, you know, to the people, but I do think it was a script that people liked it. And they, once they talked to me, they liked also the approach I was going to give, because I wanted to really work in the art, like there was everything had a, I wanted the sound to be, you know, pay attention to the sound, to the art, to everything, to every little detail, and I think that people loved that about the approach. So yeah, I think it was because of.
I can't help but assume too that the film is a beautiful story of past trauma.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And a mother and daughter dealing with trauma, and each has their own. And there's some traumas that are actually not even spoken of very much. And I imagine that with my very brief history lesson that you've shared with me.
Yes.
That stories that handle trauma respectfully and honestly must just be so appreciated in a country that's been through military dictatorships and families disappearing.
Oh yeah, yes.
Yeah, even though the film isn't about that, but I'm sure it communicates.
Yes, of course. Yes, we just had the commemoration of the. Dictator, you know, on the 24th of March, it was 1976 when the coup, and it was like, for people, it's very emotional, everything, you know, because still there, it's not so long ago. It is long ago, but not at the same time, it's not long ago. So it's like, so yeah, I think people have this understanding for this kind of drama. Also, people sometimes don't want, you know, drama. People want to get... to watch a film just to get entertained. So sometimes I'm not, they tell me, oh my God, you're always with the drama. You know, well, you know, I cannot make comedy. What can I say? It doesn't come easily to me, the writing of comedy. People say, they tell me that I'm very funny when I talk sometimes, but then when I want to write, it doesn't come easily. Comedy, I wish I could, because comedy can be so good also.
Right. So your humor comes out in your personal life, but when you sit down to create.
Exactly.
You have too many important things to say.
Yes. Yes. It comes a drama thing. Yeah, definitely.
So, for sure. Yeah. And I mean, and yeah, Avik Latam is, I mean, I will. Oh, so I do want to, I'm sure we did cover this a couple years ago when the film was in Sherman Oaks Film Festival, but did you have the cast in mind early? I mean, your cast is so remarkable. And
I actually, no, I didn't. Only the mother, but because the mother, I met her doing another film. I was the, in this other film, I was the cast director, and I met her. But, and she wanted to, she knew that I was writing this film, and she wanted to work with me. In this case, she wanted to work with me. And but we did the casting, and I ended up deciding with her, like to work with her, even though I had many other good, like there were so many good actresses, you know, for this role, that it was not easy for me to, you know, say, okay, but I ended up with her, and I think it was the best because she performed, her performance is fantastic. She was, you know, like she put everything she had in, you know, in the rehearsals, because we did have to rehearsal. You know, I wanted to, very theatrical kind of thing, you know, very Bergman, you know, very like, we will rehearse all this and, you know, go through the, because it was a lot of dialogue and I didn't want to, I didn't want the thing to be fake, you know, like I really wanted the actresses to go there and like perform and be, you know, Inés and be Estela, the characters, be there in the moment and know, you know, where they're coming from and everything. So it was like a, and Cristina, the actress, was just amazing, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah, she, they're both amazing, but yeah, she was just, and to show, I mean, for those who haven't seen it yet, we're not doing any spoilers, which is great, just naturally, but both performers just share so many different sides of their humanity. Yes. You know, there are times you have empathy for them. There's times you can't believe how cruel they can be. You know, nobody is a perfect human being, and in your film is so authentic.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to do, you know, because I wanted to show that, well, people are not good or bad, you know, can be, you know.
Yeah, and the film itself, in a lot of ways, it acts out as a play, like in real time as a play, but then you use, it's so cinematic because of the filmmaking skill that you brought to it. And like you said, attention to the sound, attention to production design, attention to the cinematography. In fact, I think it was before we, like, I'm sure your film would have won Best Cinematography. We'd had that category back then.
Yeah.
Because it's just stunningly beautiful too, just on the eyes. But I, as a fan of cinema, I think one of my favorite genres that isn't a real genre unless you run a film festival is the films that could be a play, but they're so cinematic it would lose so much if it were a play, but you still have that immediacy with the actors, that as if you're watching them on stage in the same room with them.
Yeah. So yeah, and the DP was like fantastic. He's fantastic. I love his work. So yeah,
just brilliant work.
Right. Brilliant. Yeah.
But every like you said, you cared about every element that your audience experienced, whether it was picture, sound, everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Color. Yeah. To me, it was, for, at least in this film, it was really important for me to do it. I'm not sure if I'm going to do it in all my films. I hope so, because it's the way I like to work, like everything, little thing, but well, I don't know. We'll see how it comes.
And when you say this film was very important, was it the subject or the script, or just that you were, okay, I've gone to university now and I wanted, was it to show what you can do?
Yeah, was it to show to myself what I can do. First, because I directed it by myself this time, I didn't co-direct. I did want it to see what was able myself, but only to myself, you know, if I was able to do what I wanted to do, if I was, you know, if I got what it takes to do what I thought I wanted to do, you know, well, Yeah, and of course, you always say, well, I could have done better this or that, always. But I think I managed to do what I could do with the little money I had and with the people I had. It was what I could. I did my best. So, yeah, it was that's what. And because also it was I was filming for the first time in Argentina. So for me, it was also important that. So I guess it's important because of that, and because of course it's a story that I want to continue. You know, I want to keep doing three shorts that can go together with that one. You know, like it's going to be like a continuation of the story of the different characters. Like I'm not going to talk here because I'm going to spoil the whole Avec Le Temps thing, but.
Bigger plans.
Yes. And
with the same characters.
With the same characters. The characters are going to appear somehow there, but it's going to be some. You can, if you see the short films together, it will be a continuation. If you don't, you can.
Yeah, they'll be fine apart. Yeah, that sounds cool. That sounds wonderful.
So that's why it's a project now. Yeah.
It's a project. And you've written those scripts and you're.
Yeah. I am in the process of rewriting now and, I'm finding the money to do it. And I'm also post-producing a documentary that is, we are doing it, which this documentary I co-directed with somebody else. And it's a feature film, and we are doing the color and the sound now. So I have to finish that, and I'm working in both things, you know. Like, so I hope I'll finish this After Silence. After the Silence is called the documentary, and I hope I can start with the festival run soon with that one.
Yeah, so you're staying very busy.
Yeah, I am. So.
And are there things outside of film that keep you busy, or are you mostly focused on that?
No, I'm mostly focused on film, and also of course in working for a living, which is not to make my own films. I never make money. Because it's the way it is. It's more something else that you do it because you love to do it and telling stories. But it's not Hollywood. It's not that you are like. But so I edit and I do something else for a living, you know. So,
yeah.
But I'm still, and I do also photography, like still photograph, which I love. So that's why I do mostly.
Yeah, it's always, I think that's another reason, heck, that's the reason for the podcast, really, and the TV series that came out of it, is that, you know, all of the artists involved, everyone works just so that they can create something that they know they're creating just for the sake of creation, because short films just don't make money. No one's ever made a short film saying, okay, when this comes out, I'm going to be able to buy a big house. Like, it just
Yes, exactly. But even feature films, sometimes they don't make money. You know?
Oh, most of the time.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah.
And if they make money for anyone, it's not the filmmaker.
Exactly. It's not the filmmaker. Yes, you said it. So I learned that there is no way you make money with that. I had a friend that he wanted to be a filmmaker, but he wanted to make money with films, and he's very frustrated because he couldn't, like, all the, you know, so he got really like tired of it, I guess, because every time he made a film, he just didn't make any money, of course. And then he was so frustrated with everything, angry. And so in my case, no, I just do it because I love telling stories. I love the whole writing them. I love doing the casting. I love working with actors. And also I like documentary. I like making documentary. It's a little bit different. it's to me, it's more complex, the documentary part, because you are working with real people, and depending on the documentary you're doing, and the things you ask for the people, to the people, you know, then you have to, it's a big responsibility, the documentary part. So I get more cautious with it, in my case. So, but I do admire so many filmmakers that do great documentaries, great. So,
yeah, that is interesting, because you made me realize, as you said that, that when you're making your own film, you're responsible to yourself. But yeah, making documentary, you're responsible to the subject.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. To the subject, to yourself too, of course, but the subject, yeah. And it's not something easy, because you have a big responsibility. That's what I don't know. That's a challenge.
A challenge. But you've you're nearly completed. And this is the one began so long ago? Or
no, that one is the one of the children of Elizabeth. This is a new one. It's about it's also about the dictatorship in this case, but it's about a town that was taken as a clandestine, not as a calendar. It was taken, it was like a big concentration camp. The military took the town. They were there for 7 years. They didn't allow people to come in or out without, they had to, you know, give the permission, and they were able to do whatever they wanted in that town, you know, because.
Interesting. So yes, the town was isolated.
Was isolated because it was a town in the north of Argentina that used to be a sugar factory. The town was formed around a sugar factory that was closed down in the 60s, imagine, 68, by another military government, not the one, the last one, but the one before. And a lot of people got, well, the factory, the actually, you know, big factory is still there in the town, abandoned. It's surrounded by big walls, the same owners. They don't allow people to go in there, but you can see the chimneys. And the people there, well, the people there were blamed to help the guerrilla, which is wasn't like that, because it was really close to the mountain. So
right. So yeah, the government isolated them and treated it like almost like a prison camp, because they suspected them of being guerrillas, but no.
Yes.
Yeah, no.
No, but they did, like, there is many disappeared people in the town, of course, because they,
yeah, because a military dictatorship.
Yeah, 7 years of like hell they live there.
Yeah. So soldiers just grab people and disappear them.
Mm-hmm. It's about the town, many years later they still are afraid of everything, I will say. Because they were unionized, so they were really strong fighting for the rights, but they were not guerrilla necessarily. Some of them, yes, but not most of them. So they don't have memory about how strong they were as workers. They don't, because the fear, you know, erase. Well, it's about memory. So this film is, so when I say responsibility, I say because of that, you know, it's people that is very poor still in the middle of the country. And they open up telling these stories, even though they are afraid of what can happen. So you do have responsibility, right, to which story you tell and how, and also to give it back, you know, to say, okay, this is the film, here it is. It's for you. You can, you know, so.
And yeah. Did you know the story of this town? And
I didn't know
before. Time decide to make a film, or did
no,
you?
No, I didn't know it. But I had a friend, but it was my uncle has a friend that was in prison for political reasons with him. And he was from that town. And he wanted to tell the story, and he contacted me. That's how I got involved. But it wasn't something that this person grew up in this town, and he wanted to tell the story. So that's how I got even close to, because that's how I start to get close to the people there, because they won't open easily, you know, like the people. Yeah.
Yeah, wow, fascinating. That's such a powerful story. No wonder when they said, when they brought you the story of the town, your response was obviously that this story needs to be heard.
Yeah, it needs to be heard. Yeah, it needs to be heard, and the town needs to be. I think the town should have a compensation. You know, somehow.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, for example, this big factory that is there, it shouldn't be there without producing anything for the people. You know, like people there are really poor still, and.
That's a very well-known story of a factory town where there's one employer for the whole town, and then when that employer goes away,
people have to leave their homes. The thing is that this province in Argentina, which is in the north, is where I grew up, used to live because we did have a lot of sugar factories, so we will export sugar to other countries and also inside Argentina. But this military government in the 68 closed like 13 factories in a single day like this. So thousands of people were like no work, thousands, because they decided they wanted to take the factory for themselves. It was a long, long story, but it's something that the province changed because economically they destroyed the province, this province in the north. You know, it's a big fight between Buenos Aires and the rest, you know, in this case, the north. So, yeah. I have this documentary to just almost done. It's just have to finish the sound and the color. And then I'm going to work in this, the one that I started a long time ago. And I'm going to continue doing the fiction things. I hope I can manage to do it with economically speaking, you know, we'll see grants or wherever. I have to manage because I hate producing. I hate the executive thing. Oh gosh, that's not my thing. But well, you have to do it.
You have to do it unless you somehow meet that person that's willing to do it. But yeah, that's impossible.
Almost impossible, especially here in Argentina. I'll see if I can do something with Canada since I'm Canadian too, and see, but we'll see. Because today art is not easy, and globally. It's not something that the funding is not so easy. So.
It's always been, I don't know if there was ever a time when it wasn't difficult, but yeah, it's a challenging time, and I don't think I say this too often on the podcast, but I say it to people, filmmakers all the time, and I hope it never bums them out. But I always say the skill level of raising money and the skills involved in filmmaking, I know very few people with both. Most of the time,
it's one or the other.
A talented artist who cannot deal with money people.
That's me.
Yeah. Or there's people I've known who can somehow walk into a room and walk out with a promise to fund an idea that sucks. And I'm like, why can't I often you refer to them as used car salesmen. I'm like, why can't the used car salesman personality just say, okay, I'm a hack. I will devote my skills towards someone with skill. But you know, most of those used car salesmen also think that their ideas are brilliant.
Yeah, you're right. Yes. Well, I wish I could have the, you know, both, but well, in my case, it's just one. And the other, I have to find somebody that know how to do it better than me. So
look, I fall under that category myself. I think I run very beautiful film festivals, and people say to me, shouldn't you do fundraisers for the nonprofit? I go, of course I should do fundraisers. I don't. That's all of a sudden you're throwing me into the deep end. I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to ask anyone for money.
I understand perfectly. Yeah. How you? Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Well, it's a lot of work. Also, you know, like to do. Imagine if you had to do the festival, the fundraising. It's difficult to do everything. So yeah,
Yeah. Then who's going to pay attention to the actual films?
Exactly.
it'd be crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it's nice to hear you have all these projects going on. And I certainly hope if I ever know of anyone who's, you know, whatever, I wish there was something I could do to help you get the additional stories told.
Well, when I need help, I'm going to ask them for sure. And then we'll see what we can do. Once I finish doing all the projects and like writing the scripts, finish. And so we'll see.
All right. But, do you have a website or social media that people?
Oh, see? Yeah. Well, I'm not very good at social media either lately, only for the film. When I had a Vecle time, yes, I was more there. But I do have a webpage. It's www.evaurrutiaphotography.com. It's going to be like it's my name and last name, .com. And my Instagram, as I said, it's Evaurrutia also. It's me.urrutia. That's my Instagram. And you'll see there all the posting I did is about Vecle Don mostly. And my Facebook is the same thing. Sometimes I will post some about human rights, things about human rights, but I'm not really, really good managing my own social media. I have to get better at that, but yeah.
I understand. And for anyone listening, those will be clickable links in the show notes. I'll make sure to verify.
Yeah. Actually, in the Instagram, you can, my webpage is there.
It's in the
photography.com. Yeah.
In the profile. Sure. Yeah. And Lord knows, I'm trying to be good about social media.
Yeah, I get that. It's just too much for me. It's like too much internet, too much. I do everything on the computer. I edit. I do also a lot of Photoshop work for people. And it's just too much in my eyes, you know, and everything. So it should, or the cell, I'm not very good with these glasses and myself. So that's why I'm not so involved in social media. Because if I had to do it in the phone, just not my generation. It's just, I suck.
It's hard. My social media should be about film festivals and this and that. And honestly, most of the time I'm just sharing pictures of my garden. I'm very proud of my vegetables and fruits that I grow. I'm always like, this is exciting. There's a fresh apple on the tree. I got to share this.
Oh, my God. That's good that you have that. I wish you have a garden, actually, at home. Eh?
I have a garden. I have a garden.
I have a big, like a little patio with a lot of plants here in the city. Imagine it's like Buenos Aires, like, say, New York. But I have a house with a patio. And I have some plants there, but I wish I could have like I do have an orange tree, a little one. It's growing. I love that. That's what I miss about Vancouver, the mountains and the sea. Oh my God!
Oh, Vancouver! It's so funny to me that Vancouver. When you mentioned Canada, I didn't know it was Vancouver at first. My best friend of the last 40 years, he lives in Vancouver. I think
really?
Vancouver is one of the best cities in the world.
It's beautiful, huh? Yes, it is.
It's
yes.
Beautiful, and walking around, I just get a good feeling when I'm there. It's hard to describe what a pleasant place it is to be.
Yeah, it is, actually. I lived there 14 years, so I have so many friends and also some family. And then my sister, she's in Montreal, so Montreal. And she has the dance school, and well, she's also involved in art with the dancing part. So I go more to Montreal now because I go and see my sister and my nephew there. But every time I can, I also visit Vancouver because it's just fantastic.
Fantastic. Is that? I didn't mention that Avec le Temps has, you know, French and Spanish.
Yes.
Is that your connection to French, that you have a sister in Montreal? Or?
Well, the French has a story. I was in love with a French woman, and that's how the French came. to be part of the whole thing. Weird, because it was because of that. And I ended up being in the story, but it's not about the love story, you know, it's something else. It's a French teacher. So, but yeah, I do have the connection. Because of that, I started having the connection with French, and now with Montreal, of course, I do have a connection with the French, and I love the language. I love languages in general, but I don't speak, well, I speak English, a little bit of French, a little bit, not as much as I want to, and Spanish. But if in my next life, I think I'm going to be either a biologist, underwater biologist, because I love, you know, animals in general, but the ones in the water, I love water. Or I'm going to be do something with languages. I don't know. That's my next life, because you cannot do everything in one life, right?
I am with you too. I love language. I've always loved language. I used to pick up languages easier as a young person. Yes. Now I barely remember any of what I learned when I was young. But yeah, whenever I'm in a country for long enough to start picking it up, I should have moved. I should have finished university and gone straight to Paris or Italy, somewhere where I could have just been immersed and learned some languages, because there's just a beauty to it, I think.
Oh, I think it's, yeah. Yeah, I've been watching a lot of Korean, from Korea, series, or and even from China, and I could hear the differences between the both languages, of course. I watch and just listen, and it's fantastic, the sound of both, you know, different kind of course, because of different languages, but it's just amazing, amazing. Even though I don't understand, I can start, you know, picking some sounds that, and seeing the subtitles and saying, oh, this is what they are saying, and this is, it's fantastic.
It really is, it really is. And yeah, I used to, but whatever, I've had friends who were recently immigrated from China. And I always get mad at Americans who, American representation of Chinese doesn't sound like Chinese at all. Actual Chinese is very gentle, and there's a lot of sh sounds, like,
yes, sure.
Yes. And you know, you hear a horrible stand-up comedian say, bing bong, ting tong. And I'm
Chinese. That. Well, the same here in Argentina. I don't know, but Argentinians do the same thing here with the Chinese, and it's not the sound if you start listening.
Yeah, when I actually had a very close friend, and he'd be on the phone with relatives in China, and I'd listen to the sound, I'm like, it's a beautiful language, and it's beautiful. Not at all how I don't know beautiful. Where these misrepresentations come from.
Me neither. Anyways.
Yeah. Well, other cultures always get misrepresented. I think it's natural, maybe, for human beings to be rude to others. I don't know. Hopefully not.
Yes, I guess it is. Yes. Yeah. We have to learn to be a little bit more tolerant and just try to respect differences, you know, celebrate differences, actually.
I often bore people with my annoying diatribe about, I don't know why the British had to take Italia and call it Italy, and Turkey and call it Turkey. Bulgaria stayed Bulgaria. Why did they have to change, the river Tevere, they called the Tiber. And I'm like, what? You can say Tevere. I just don't understand this English speaking thing of just mangling everything, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think, I don't know if at least Spanish people sometimes do the same thing.
Actually, everyone does that. Well, the British sent, the British were all over the world, and
yes,
so they get the brunt of it. But it's true. Everybody.
I think, yeah. Even the names sometimes, instead, like, it's Frank, and they will call Pancho, Francisco, you know, which is no, it's Frank, you know, like, but yeah. So
yeah,
whatever.
All right, well,
anyways.
Yeah, I'll. It's. I have a feeling you and I could chat for a very long time about
this
stuff. So,
yes, we could. So.
I will cut myself off and do the closing little explanation. But I want to encourage everyone to watch your film Avec le Temps, which is translates to With Time. It's a beautiful, incredible film. In fact, I can tell you, a woman who lives in Chicago who had a film in your season sent me emails. As she watched, she kept sending me emails. I love this film. I love this film. And when she got to your film, like, this is the most beautiful film. So,
oh, nice to hear.
Highly encourage everyone to go to Amazon Prime Video on a large television. You definitely should not watch cinema on a phone.
Yeah, please.
Which I know that ages us too, that we think you should see things big, but
yeah,
you know, but so go to a wonderful television and open the Amazon Prime Video app and just type in search Discover Indie Film. And in season 7, episode 8 is Avec le Temps. And I'm sure anyone who appreciates cinema will enjoy it. If you love film, it's just beautiful work. If you want to learn more about that TV series or this podcast, the website is discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's at DIFWINS. And yeah, I'll update it more. I swear, I'll update it. I'm actually a little behind. Yeah, I even have one of those apps that lets you schedule things, so I really have no excuse anymore, but I still will have to promote. But anyhow, so that's the social media for that. Oh, and if you're listening to this, please like and subscribe. Always nice. If you watch the TV series, please give it 5 stars at Amazon.com after watching it. I mentioned that Avec le Temps won those awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. The website for that is ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. And the sister festival that Ava has, you've been on the filmmakers board for both festivals, but the sister festival that we hold every June is Film Invasion Los Angeles. And people can learn about it if they go to filminvasionla.com, and it's at filminvasionla on social media. And the last thing to mention is, hey, I am glutton for punishment. I don't respect my own personal time. And so to try to help even more films get out there, we started a smart TV app. So whether it's on Roku TV, Amazon Fire TV, Android TV, Apple TV, Android mobile, and iPhone mobile, if you go to your app store and search for TV High, T-V-H-I, or if you go to watchtvhigh.com, TV High is a new smart TV app / streaming service with wonderful, mostly independent content. And it's called TV High because if you can use drugs responsibly, the content is perfectly matched for what you might want to watch when you're stoned. And I have friends in recovery, so I always add, don't use drugs if they destroy your life. But if you can use marijuana in a way that is only mostly positive in your life, then Watch TV High is perfect for you.
Right, great.
And Ava's smiling. The idea makes everybody smile. I'm hoping things go well with it. And Ava, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff, for having me. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening.